This is Self-Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self-Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. She writes, being in therapy is hard for her in some ways because, quote, I just can't help always needing to understand what and why the therapist is doing something so that I can be able to trust and relax. Someone else, being an HSP, has worked against me, but has also actually helped protect me and help me be a better person. Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. When I asked for comments from those of you who identify with the personality trait of being a highly sensitive person, boy, did you come through. We're going to talk about HSP today, highly sensitive people. I really haven't focused on it as a clinician, and I've learned through my research for this episode that perhaps I should have, given that 15 to 20% of the population is thought to, quote unquote, have it. And I say that in quotes because it's not something you have. It's something you are. It's not an illness or a problem. It's a personality trait. It characterizes you. It's what people might say about you when they're trying to describe you, like he's stubborn or she's persistent. They might say, you know, she gets things before many people do. I'll read some of the messages and questions that several people had in contacting me, and I'll do my best to answer, at least provide information. But also, this episode will have lots of great links for you. One, in fact, that's a self-test for HSP, researched and designed by the psychologist who coined the term, Dr. Elaine Aaron. We won't do an email or voicemail today, as the episode will be quite full as it is. But before we go on, AG1 continues to get better and offer more. Get a full year supply of D3 plus K2, as well as 5 travel packs when you order the first time. Now, you have to have vitamin D in order to absorb calcium, guys. So drinkag1.com/selfwork. That's where you can get it. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why, for years, I've been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 conducts relentless testing to set the standard for purity and potency. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword, it's a commitment. And at each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they obsess over product quality, the standards of their manufacturing, and sustainable practices. Taking care of your health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by replacing all those multiple health supplements, like your multivitamins, digestive aids, immune support, and more, in just one simple scoop. AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for their quality, and I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. I've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high-quality product that I drink every day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try it and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/selfwork. Again, that's drinkag1.com/selfwork. Check it out. You'll be glad you did. I was stunned to discover in my research for this episode that 15 to 20% of humans seem to have the personality trait of being a highly sensitive person. The psychologist who coined the term in the 1990s is Elaine Aaron, A-R-O-N, and she's gone on to write several best-selling books about it. Again, HSP isn't a disorder, and that's important to say first and foremost. She stresses many things, but here are 3 facts. First, that it's different, but it also can be related to introversion. But 30% of people who are highly sensitive are more extroverted. Second, it can be called shyness, but it isn't shyness. And third, it can be seen in species other than humans. I think that's fascinating. I'll have Dr. Aaron's website link in the show notes. I want to share something with you that I noticed, however, about her website. Yeah, she had a link to books and to a free and empirically validated self-test, which again, you have the link for. But what I noticed was the very simplicity of her website. She didn't have any of the fancy things that so many websites pummel you with, and certainly not anything trying to grab you or your money. It's a plainer than most website, but one wherein she shares upcoming support meetings for those who identify as being highly sensitive. It was refreshing, frankly, and validated for me, at least, the sincerity of Dr. Aaron's message, her concern, and her passion for this topic. But here are some questions straight from her website that if you answer yes to them, you might want to look into HSP some more. There's a self-test for adults, a test about children, and also a test about another subcategory, which is called sensation seeking, which we'll talk about in a minute. Here are some of the questions just to give you a taste. Are you easily overwhelmed by such things as bright lights, strong smells, coarse fabrics, or sirens nearby? Do you get rattled when you have to do a lot in a short amount of time? Do you make a point of avoiding violent movies and TV shows? Do you need to withdraw during busy days into a bed or a darkened room or some other place where you can just have privacy? Do you make it a priority to arrange your life to avoid upsetting or overwhelming situations? Do you notice or enjoy delicate or fine scents, tastes, sounds, or works of art? Do you have a rich and complex inner life? And we'll talk about that in a second. When you were a child, did your parents or teachers see you as sensitive or shy? If you answered yes to some of these, then I suggest you head over to Dr. Aaron's website and take the full test. It may help you understand more than you have about yourself and your responses to the world around you. So let's go back. What's this rich inner life she's talking about? The positive way of thinking about it is that those with a rich inner life are more aware of their dreams, their goals, their values, the deeper meanings in things, their fantasies, their emotions, both joyful and dark. Here's another pretty good definition of what it is. It's a life being attuned to yourself. That's not selfishness, just being attuned to yourself. It's about how connected someone is with every aspect of their inner self, from thoughts, creativity, logic, dreams, and many more. A rich inner life equals happiness, but not the kind that needs achievement. It's about being rich within. That sounds pretty wonderful. But remember, in the case of HSP, you soak up a lot of stimulation from your world. You're kind of a sponge, and so you can get easily overstimulated. Connect that with having a lot going on already in your mind, in your inner awareness, this rich inner life, and your outer awareness is on full blast. Wow, that's a lot. Now let's talk for a second about that subset called sensation seeking. One person who wrote in talked about her identity with this as why she loves traveling to new cultures so much. The smells, the sounds, the colors, the rhythm, the tastes, everything. All may have an intensity that a lot of us don't process, or certainly don't process as deeply or quickly. But now, is HSP the same as having a whole bunch of empathy, or even being an empath? Which is a term, frankly, debated in mental health. Some believe empaths don't exist. They're simply people whose empathy is highly attuned to others. But others believe it's a true trait or state of being. Judith Orloff has written a lot about empathy and being an empath, as she's the author of The Genius of Empathy and The Empath Survival Guide. Here I'm going to quote her as she points out the similarities and differences between being highly empathic and being highly sensitive. Empaths have all the traits of someone with HSP. However, empaths take the experience of the highly sensitive person much further. They can sense subtle energy, which is called, and I'm probably going to crucify these words, Shakti or Prana in Eastern healing traditions. And they actually absorb this Shakti from other people in different environments into their bodies. Highly sensitive people don't typically do that. Also, empaths can have profound spiritual and intuitive experiences, which aren't usually associated with HSP. In fact, this made me think about something that I often get asked. How do you not carry around the pain of the people you see? And sometimes I do, but most of the time, because I can also see people's strengths, I don't carry that pain around me. But it sounds as if a therapist also had the kind of empathy that Dr. Orloff is talking about, that they would struggle and have to find ways to dilute or to filter or to somehow release that pain from within them. Now, if you think about this distinction in terms of like it being an empathy spectrum, empaths might be on the highest end of that spectrum. Highly sensitive people are a little lower on that spectrum. People with strong empathy, but who are not HSPs or empaths, are in the middle of the spectrum. And then down at the bottom of the spectrum are people who have narcissism, maybe sociopathy, psychopaths, certainly, and borderlines. And there's a group called the empath deficient disorders, meaning these folks just don't get empathy. They don't understand their impact on other people. And it's one of the most difficult parts of being in relationship with someone who struggles with narcissism or borderline personality disorder. But now I'd like to feature what many of you actually wrote to me. I was struck by the yin and yang of it for many people who responded. Its benefits and struggles are kind of like a seesaw. You're not going to have one without the other, but it can be a little bit of a rocky ride. So here are some quotes. The toughest part is how deeply I'm affected by the news. I'm consumed by the tragedies others are experiencing. I internalize them deeply and can have a hard time recovering my own sense of joy and stability. Parenting is a challenge. It involves chaos, noise, strong emotions, and negotiations, not to mention being constantly interrupted, touched, or needed. I sometimes find all this stimulation overwhelming. Another person writes, actually from New Zealand, I'm an HSP. I've only come to realize this after I quit alcohol a couple of years ago and have since been going through a huge self-discovery journey. It's been good to understand, but hard too. Being HSP means I overthink everything, even the slightest body language. Someone else says it plays out in a positive way to be able to feel or know by intuition when something is off or not quite right in others. But, she writes, being in therapy is hard for her in some ways because, quote, I just can't help always needing to understand what and why the therapist is doing something so that I can be able to trust and relax. So her mind won't shut off and just allow the relationship to grow and exist. Someone else, being an HSP has worked against me, but has also actually helped protect me and helped me be a better person. Someone else, part of me was always dismissed or even ridiculed. And I wonder if that's a common experience. And I think probably so. Like the feeling I'm picking up on isn't valid because I don't have facts to base it on. Someone else writes, sometimes the death of a wild animal will affect me very deeply, but I need to not talk about it because others would see it as me being dramatic or excessive. Someone else, historically, I told you I got a lot of comments. Historically, I thought being highly sensitive gave me the ability to keep one step ahead of others and therefore keep myself safe. Now, I think it feeds my anxiety and means I can never switch off and relax. Someone else, after years and years of absorbing so much emotion from others, but having been raised to think that emotions aren't important or should stay hidden, I was left with so much anxiety and self-doubt. And here's the last. I've always felt things deeply. If I hear of someone being hurt, especially a child, it will keep me up at night. Sometimes I cry over the slightest things. Maybe it's a trauma response. Nonetheless, my feelings are always on the surface. So you can hear that yin and yang I was talking about, the benefits, the things that people really have treasured about this high sensitivity, but some of the problems, a hard time recovering. How do I decompress? I can't switch off. Others perceive me as dramatic or excessive. I'm overthinking and overfeeling over everything. Some of these comments seem to suggest a fear of letting other people know, afraid of seeming overly dramatic. That's a really tough battle. Maybe what would free up the conversation is an acknowledgement that being highly sensitive isn't a choice, it's a way of being. Just like introversion or extroversion, it's not a choice, it's who you are. As I was looking into what I may have written in the past about this, I found an article, actually, that I had written on empathy. And I talked about a trip that my son and husband and I went on. It wasn't to go see family. I put it that it was to go be family. And one of the things we did that Christmas, we went to Puerto Rico. None of us had ever been. My son was 21 at the time. We had a wonderful and very different kind of Christmas, as I recall. But one of the things we did was go to this really exotic jungle. And we had been warned that things would be obviously wet and sometimes slippery. So my husband and son know that I'm afraid of heights. And some of the times we were going up trails that were pretty steep. And the other things, they know that I'm not great at balancing. I have poor depth perception. And so when I'm walking, especially someplace new, I have to be very careful about where I walk and how I walk and to make sure that I've got good balance. What I wrote about in the article was that I obviously wasn't trying to call attention to myself. So, oh, I'm so scared on these rocks. But what they knew and what they were holding out their hands for, they knew what I was dealing with. And so even to keep up was hard for me. And every now and then one of them or both of them would hold out their hand saying, okay, take my hand. We don't have to talk about your fear, but I know you're afraid or I know you're a little uncomfortable with this. Thank God there was a really big guide. And one time he just picked me up and carried me because he said, oh, you'll never make this. It's a little embarrassing, but it was okay. That's empathy. The reason why I brought this up is because my son and husband knew I wasn't being dramatic. My fear is real. And all they were doing by holding out their hands was being empathic toward me. So I thought about that experience when I read an article by Dr. Carolyn Leaf, who actually had done an interview with Dr. Aaron, and they came up with these tips for people who are highly sensitive. Now, some of these may seem a little, well, yeah, wouldn't that be nice for everybody? But it's especially important for people who have high sensitivity. And I think some of the people who were talking about, I've got to figure out how to decompress, I need to recover, I need to somehow switch off. These are ideas that are helpful to them. They say, this is now Dr. Leaf and Dr. Aaron, get lots of downtime because you can feel exhausted and overwhelmed very quickly. They suggest at least an hour per day where you switch off to the external and switch on to your internal processing. In fact, Dr. Leaf calls those thinker moments where you let your mind wander and daydream. And now she's a neuropsychologist. These moments give your brain a rest and allow it to reboot and heal. So you can plan in some thinker moments. Now, do parents with kids have a whole hour to themselves a day? Probably not. So I think you can take 10 minutes or 5 minutes and allow your brain to relax. Number two is acknowledging that your sensitivity is real. This is who you are. You're not making mistakes. You're not a failure. You embrace and understand your sensitivity. Number three, you want to reframe your past. They suggest that you want to recognize that people maybe pressured you or made assumptions about you because of your sensitivity, because you didn't fit into the norm. Maybe you were called shy or a crybaby at school. So you want to put that in the context of your culture, your family, whatever, and not to carry that around as somehow that makes me a bad person. And of course, their fourth suggestion, you want to heal trauma. Because of course, if you do have trauma added in with being highly sensitive, then that can be a burden that is so difficult to bear. Dr. Aaron's website actually has a great list of therapists that have been trained in HSP. So you might want to check those out. Now, Dr. Leaf talks about having her own app with trauma called Switch, and I'll have the link in the show notes for you. The fifth is to rearrange your lifestyle to suit your sensitivity. If you need more me time, then leave work at 5 o'clock. And if other people stay on, so be it. You know, a lot of times therapists will say to each other, well, how many people do you see a day? And some people will say, I see 8. Others will go, wow, you see 8. I only see 4. Okay. That kind of comparison isn't helpful because we all have our limits. We all have the amount of focus that we could give something, and then we need to take a break. So you don't want to necessarily compare your life with somebody else. Look at all he's getting done, and this is all I can do. So what? You are doing what you're doing. It's the quality of what you do that counts, not the quantity. About many things, obviously. But you want to make sure you take time to focus on your mental and physical self-care. Okay, here's one more point that I thought was really important to address. Some of you who are listening to this who are not HSP say, well, what about those of us who aren't highly sensitive? What are we supposed to do? In fact, isn't that sensitivity thing what some people say in order to control things? Actually, there have been studies on that exact thing, and there's a huge difference between actually having high sensitivity and being what they call a signaler of high sensitivity. Meaning, you know, I'm highly sensitive, so X, Y, or Z has to happen. That's someone who's signaling their high sensitivity. Here's a study, and the link for it will be in your show notes, about the difference between signaling high sensitivity and being a highly sensitive person. A new study coming out of Poland used this scale, for lack of a better word. How would you answer these questions? I sometimes ask for privileges because of my high sensitivity. People treat me in a special way because they know how sensitive I am. When I mention that I'm a highly sensitive person, others are more willing to help me. Sometimes I avoid penalties for omissions or mistakes at work when I reveal that I'm a highly sensitive person. I say I'm a highly sensitive person so people will treat me better. Now, remember my story about the jungle. Being a signaler of high sensitivity is not the same as asking for empathy with people who know you and love you. Those are totally different. But in this study, there was a zero correlation, meaning being a person who may signal high sensitivity and being an actual sensory processing sensitive person, there's no correlation between them. In fact, if you're highly sensitive, you don't signal that you are. You don't use your high sensitivity as a reason why you should be treated differently. So I think it's important to know that. Now, folks may tell you they're highly sensitive and then ask you to do something. I, for example, have a patient who is highly sensitive, and she asks that I turn off the ceiling fan, or the first session she did, so I always have it off. It's just like if someone has trauma around a certain texture, then I will remove the blanket that has that same texture from my office when they come see me. I'm aware that that's a trigger for them, so I'm going to try to be kind and understand. But it's not an excuse. It's just a fact about them. I have other clients, for example, who will say they need a second to kind of get grounded. They come to the office early and sit in the waiting room for just a few minutes just to feel grounded. I think what we as a culture can do is to be sensitive to people who are highly sensitive, to understand that there's no manipulation. It's just a fact about them. And although being highly sensitive sounds like it has really a tremendous positive impact, that they feel more deeply, they sense more deeply, but it also can bring with it some problems to live daily life. And that's a tough battle. I hope that you can win it, as Dr. Leaf would say, one thinker moment at a time. I loved all these comments. Thank you so much for those of you who responded. Researching this kind of made me wonder, well, do I consider myself highly sensitive? I don't think so. I'm pretty empathic. Also made me a little bit envious. I might like to try that out just for a few seconds to see what it feels like. But I'm so glad that people felt free to write in and answer my questions. I've learned a lot, and I hope you have. My TEDx talk is now almost 615,000 views. I'm just elated and honored that the message is getting out, and more people are reaching out to me to speak to small groups. I want to speak to yours. Ask Dr. Margaret at drmargaretrutherford.com. Or you can go on my website at drmargaretrutherford.com, and there's a contact tab, and you could put in, I'd like Dr. Margaret to speak to this group or that group. This next month, I'm speaking to the Arkansas Nurses Association. Thank you, as always, for being here. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self-Work.